Angels have been called God's secret messengers. I'm not sure that's a very good description for them. I mean, it's catchy, but that's probably not a very good description because the Bible has a lot to say about angels. If you were with us last week, we talked a little bit about the nature of angels. We didn't get through all that information, so I do want to finish up a little bit of that material, and then we'll move to the work of angels. And then after we deal with that, we'll deal with some other matters. But you can take angels and divide their work into several categories and all the things that they do. But as far as the nature of angels, we put some passages on the board last week and let you have the opportunity to write those down. So we'll go ahead and try to continue with that format today, thinking again for a little while longer, the nature of angels. We have, when we think about the nature of angels, some information about good angels, as well as some information about bad angels. So we'll try to tie that in together and look, first of all, at good angels. Let's see what we pick up as far as the nature from the book of Luke. Luke chapter 15, see what we have in verse 7. Then we'll also see what we can find over in the book of Luke a little earlier. Luke chapter 1, verses 12 to 13, plus the information in verses 18 to 20. And then we'll also, we could look at Jude 9, but I think we'll just say 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 11. I'm going to put a slash as far as Jude 9, because that's a good cross-reference. It gives us basically the same information. Then we'll highlight some information. And then as far as our evil angels, we'll take a look at James chapter 2, verse 19. And then we'll take a look at Matthew chapter 8 and verse 31. These would be two key references for evil angels. Let's start out with Luke chapter 15. Somebody there and want to take care of that for us? Luke chapter 15 and verse 7. All right, Dolores, thank you. Okay, this is in the context of someone coming back, the 99 do not leave, the one does leave. And Jesus talks about what in heaven? There is rejoicing. Among the angelic host, there is rejoicing in heaven. If you rejoice, would you say that a robot can rejoice? No. If you're able to rejoice, what does that tell us about your nature? All right, there are emotions. You can feel, at least that's how we would describe it from a human perspective. So if the angels in heaven can rejoice, that suggests to us very strongly, just this one passage, that they do have emotions. So as we think about the nature, now we talk about emotions. When you start thinking about emotion, I wasn't so much a fan of the new Star Trek series, but if you watch the new Star Trek series, you had Data. Anybody kind of remember him? He was the android. Okay, a few people will acknowledge that. The big thing for Data was, at one point in the show, he wanted an emotion chip. He could do all this great stuff. He had all kinds of strength, and he was able to process all kinds of information, but he wanted the emotion chip. That was something that really couldn't be taught to him. He wanted to know what it was like to love and to cry and to feel sadness and all those emotions. For him, that was a big deal. So if you strip emotion from life, you strip out a lot of things. Let's take a look now at Luke chapter 1. We'll start with verses 12 and 13, and then also see what we have down there in verses 18 through 20. Verses 12 and 13, who has it and is ready to go? Luke 1, 12 and 13. All right, Lois.
And Zacharias was troubled when he saw him, and fear gripped him. But the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, Zacharias, for your petition has been heard, and your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you will give him the name John."
Okay, here's a good man, a godly man, a righteous man, Zacharias. The angel shows up and says, "Hey, I'm here to terrorize you." "No, I'm here to do what? I'm here to show, how am I going to treat you? I'm not going to be mean to you. I'm going to show," would you say he was compassionate? Offer some comfort. So they're capable of joy, Luke chapter 15 and verse 7, but now, compassion. If they're going to interact with man, you would hope that that would be one of the things that they would be capable of, or one of the things that they'd be interested in doing. That same chapter, Lois, are you still there? We move down to verses 18 through 20.
And Zacharias said to the angel, "How shall I know this for certain? For I am an old man, and my wife is advanced in years." And the angel answered and said to him, "I am Gabriel, who stands in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to bring you this good news. And behold, you shall be silent and unable to speak until the day when these things take place, because you did not believe my my words, which shall be fulfilled in their proper time.
Thank you. Do we have a little bit now as we think about Gabriel? Again, apparently a fairly high-ranking angel. Now there's not joy. Now there's not compassion. Now what do you see?
Sternness.
Well, I think you could use that word, sternness. Anything else that you might tie in there? That's an excellent answer.
Discipline.
Discipline. All right, discipline. You also see that. Anything else? There's still one more word that I'm thinking of.
Disappointed or angry.
Yeah, or maybe some frustration. So when you think about angels, you have, from just these three passages, quite a range. Very interesting. All right, and then let's take that reference over in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 11. Peter and Jude often have some very similar things as far as wording, so we're not going to pick up the Jude 9 reference. But 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 11, let's see this from a slightly different perspective. Steve?
Whereas angels who are greater in power and might do not bring a reviling accusation against them before the Lord.
Okay, they're greater in power and might than people are, and yet even though they have superior powers in a lot of ways, what did he say? Self-control. Do they have it or not?
Yes.
They do. Jude talks about, in Jude 9, that Michael, the archangel, was not willing to bring any kind of terrible dispute against Satan. He said, God's going to handle you. So he was able to just kind of say, as frustrating as that was, I'm going to be hands-off on this, and God is going to take care of you. So very interesting that these creatures, out of all the things that they have when it comes to the nature, as we start summing things up, self-control is also there as well. So it'll be interesting to see them in person at some point, and certainly spend eternity with them. Now, we'll let you have some thoughts, but I did want to add a couple of the things about evil angels. Would you say that evil angels have intellect? Evil angels are the same, one and the same, and I think they are, and we're going to go with that conclusion for the sake of our class today. Would you say that they have intellect? Yes. And how would we be able to determine that? When Jesus was on the earth, what happened when those evil spirits saw him? They said, we know who you are. Well, that takes some intellect to have an understanding. Would you say that demons also had a will? Matthew chapter 8 and verse 31, I've got that reference up there, but we'll just go ahead and kind of take this one on as a class. Remember, the demons, they knew that they were going to have to be cast out, and what did they say? Would you send us into the pigs, the herd of swine? So, did they have a will? Yes, they did. But let's pick up James chapter 2 and verse 19, and this will sum it up as far as what I wanted to say about angels and their nature. James 2 and verse 19. Can we have it?
Yeah.
Okay.
While they promised them liberty, they themselves are the servants of corruption, for of whom man is overcome of the same.
Is that James 2, verse 19?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's let you finish it out. That's not what I was expecting, but maybe I'm wrong.
It just says, of the same he brought in God.
Okay. Are you sure that's the second chapter of James?
Oh, no, it's not.
Okay. Okay.
I'm still in
Peter. Okay.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Well,
somebody's on
the I've done that as often as anybody else, so just turn the clock. All right.
219.
Oh.
James.
Thou believest that there is one God, thou doest well. Devils also believe
in the devil. There we go. All right, these devils, these evil angels, he says they what? Do they believe? Yeah, not so much an emotion there, but once again, you have the idea of intellect. And now he says they believe and they shudder or they tremble. When you start looking at all those emotions, compassion, frustration, self-control, trembling, joy, what's it sound like? It really sounds like people. you wonder just how many emotions they have compared to the human range of emotions, and we can't answer that question right now, but there definitely are some definite parallels, some very strong similarities. So just kind of fascinating that when God created both, they were sort of configured in the same basic way. Anything that you want to add or ask over some of the things that we've talked about with their nature? Stan?
You may have covered this previously because we were here the last few Sundays. Why did God even use angels?
Why?
Well,
I don't know that we're given a lot of information about that. Let's go back to Psalm 103, 20 and 21 and take a look at that. We'll also take a look at Nehemiah chapter 9 and verse 6. Psalm 103, 20 and 21. Who wants to be heading there? We'll get that lined up, and then we'll also get our Nehemiah text lined up. Psalm 103, 20 and 21. Bonnie? And then back in the book of Nehemiah chapter 9 and verse 6. Nehemiah 9, verse 6. All right, that'll be Glenda. Psalm 103, 20 and 21. Bonnie? All right, you have at least three statements there, Stan, as far as angels doing the bidding of God. Sometimes people create things for service, or a person hires someone to carry out various functions. And in God's wisdom, I'm just going to put forward the suggestion that he believed that it was best to have some servants. And that helps us at least partly explain why angels exist.
Well, the things that angels do, which is to communicate between him and mankind, is something that he has done himself many times.
Yeah.
Why the angels?
Yeah. I guess if I were going to look at this, especially in a critical way, I would argue that he didn't need the angels just as he didn't need men. But when you look at the creation, when we talked about this last week, the angels, from what I can tell, were at the start of creation. So if you're going to do this, sometimes we say it's also going to be helpful or right or necessary to do this. They go hand in hand, so to speak. And it seems to me that angels made sense as far as what was going to take place with the creation to have them. Hence, they were created. Let's tie in Nehemiah 9:6 as well, and then Teresa will take your hand. Okay, the end of the verse is especially important. What does he say about the host of heaven, a reference to the angels? The host of heaven worships God. Now, this is not the easiest thought to process, but let's say that you created a house that was 50,000 square feet, and it's the finest of the fine, the very best. The property from the time that you get to the edge of the driveway all the way to the end and you look at the house, and I mean, it is the most gorgeous house that you can ever imagine, all 50,000 square feet. But nobody ever comes to visit. Wouldn't that seem a little odd? You've got this spectacular house and property, and nobody is there to appreciate it. One of the suggestions that philosophers have put forth, and I think it has some merit, is that God is so spectacular, him alone from eternity, he thought, I'm going to let some creatures come into existence that will have the opportunity to see me, serve me, and share in my house, so to speak. Now, that thought to me is just, yeah, like you raised your eyebrows a little bit. That thought to me is just so incredible. I'm not sure from a human perspective you could say, well, that just doesn't make any sense. And I can understand why somebody might say that. But still, if you can imagine something that spectacular that it almost calls out for someone or something to see the house, to be given the opportunity to share in it, that does seem to be part of the reason why creation exists. So you have both men and angels falling into that category, and perhaps some other heavenly creatures as well. I'll let you munch on that for a little bit while Teresa takes her turn.
Well, I'm not positive, but it seems like Paul talked about man will
judge the angels.
Yes.
And was that in Corinthians?
Yes.
Somewhere. In Corinthians. So they have to do something for us in order to judge them.
Yeah, there are some questions about whether or not that actually means that we're going to judge angels at the end of time. That's not the only explanation for that passage, but Paul did say that. But there are some questions about the meaning of that text. Tim?
It may sound like it's oversimplified, but he created us as well as the angels. And the Bible says he created us for his pleasure.
Yeah.
And I mean, when you boil it all down, that's what it comes to. He created us and the angels and everything for his pleasure. And he has the ability to do that. And we might wonder about it, but we really can't question it.
And I say, yeah, that's where you're into God's sovereignty and trying to understand all that and piece all those things together. At the present time, it is beyond us as far as trying to completely grasp it. But part of the answer, I think, goes back to what I was saying before, and that's why I gave you the house illustration. It's just so fabulous that it calls out. We've talked about this, too, at different times. Why do people have kids? You have kids, so you're going to be able, well, some might say we had kids to work on the farm. Well, that might have been true in the past. But why have kids? Somebody says, I want to show them my love. You know, I want to share some things with my offspring. Right now, we don't have any offspring. And in some sense, since we're made in the image of God, I think that's kind of hinted at. God said, I want to have some quote-unquote offspring made in his image so that they can share. Yes.
And part of the motto of the church is companionship and fellowship.
Yeah. God could have been perfectly complete in eternity without any extra companionship, if you will. But that opportunity was made to go ahead and extend things out a little bit, angels, men, and have them with him for eternity. So, yes. Tim?
He made us like we make our children, to love, but also to love them back.
Mm-hmm.
Us to love them back, our children to love us back. And if God needed anything, and I don't say that he does, but if he did, it would be the love of his creation back to him.
Yeah. A couple good points there you bring up. John talks about that extensively in the book of 1 John. Remember, God is love. Now, he's a lot of things, but John specifically identifies that characteristic. Love, for love to work, what's required? Love always requires something. What does it require? Love requires an object. I love cars. It's not, well, I just love, I don't know what I love, but I love something. No, I love cars, I love my spouse, I love my children, I love my job, I love to read. There's always an object. And it would make sense for God, if he is love, for him to have an object. And again, not that he needed that, but it would have been very sensible for him to do that. And that's exactly what he's done. That it? All right, let's switch gears. And let's think about angels and how they help people. I'm sorry, where are we at? Glenda.
I've been looking, but I can't find that verse that you talked about.
What are we looking for?
Which one?
The one that
created
us
first question.
No.
Well, we can pull it up after a bit. So, right now, that is not sticking in my head. Okay, let's take a think. Let's think a little bit about angels and their work with people. Remember Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 14? Are they not all ministering spirits sent forth to do what? Talking about angels. Are they not all ministering spirits sent forth to do service for them that shall inherit salvation? Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 14. When you think about angels in the past, have they helped some people? Well, what about Daniel? Over there in the lion's den, Daniel chapter 6 and verse 22, did he get some assistance? You shut the mouths of the lion. I would say that was pretty helpful. And you have Elijah. What about him? 1 Kings chapter 19 verses 5 through 8. Did Elijah get some angelic help? He did. What about Jesus? Yes. Have we seen angelic help in the book of Acts? Let's take a look at a couple of passages. We know from Acts chapter 10 that Cornelius received some assistance. work slash help, since we've talked about their nature. Let's take a look at Acts chapter 5, 19 and 20, and then we'll skip forward in a few chapters and take a look at Acts chapter 8 and see what we find over there in verse 26. Who wants to be our Acts chapter 5, verses 19 and 20 reader? All right, Steve, go to you. Thank you.
But at night, an angel of the Lord opened the prison doors and brought them out and said, "Go stand in the temple and speak to the people all the words of this life."
Okay. Who was helped? Peter. Who was he helped by? An angel? What did the angel do? Opens up the prison doors. So here you have the work, not only the worship that we talked about from Nehemiah chapter 9, not only the fact that they are mighty servants, Psalm 23, 20, 21, but now we find that when we think about their work, they were involved with evangelism, helping people like Peter. Opens up the doors so Peter can get out and go preach. Acts chapter 8 and verse 26. Kathy? Okay, once again, an angel, don't know the angel's name, but was the angel involved with the work of evangelism? Yes. Now, we can point back to the Old Testament, we can point to passages like Acts 5 and Acts chapter 8 and say, look, angels went forth and they helped people who were going to inherit salvation. But the question then becomes, as we look at the miraculous work, we're in now a time period which is well past the first century. God is no longer working miraculously, he's working providentially. And now the question becomes, do angels, Hebrews 1 and verse 14, still work for God's people? And if they do, how do they work? Now, if you're teaching a class, how would you answer that question if somebody posed that to you? Two-part question. Do angels still work today for the saved? All right, we don't seem to have any no's, so let's say that that's a class yes. So, the question then becomes a follow-up question, how do they work? If they're not doing the miraculous stuff, I mean, obviously they're not opening prison doors for Christians who are incarcerated. Obviously they're not doing what we find in Acts chapter 8 where they are supernaturally appearing to somebody and saying, well, go see this one or go see that one or this is what you need to do. So if they're still working, if that's correct, how do they work? Carol? All right, and that's a good answer, but once again, let's see if we can narrow that down a little bit. Okay, how would they do that? All right. Well, that's where we want to get into the nitty-gritty and talk about that for a little bit.
Thoughts that kind of instantaneously come into our heads that lead us to the right direction.
Okay. That sounds like that's more in the special guidance category than providential category.
Well, how do you describe when,
There are times where people, it's not miraculous, it's not supernatural, but something does spur a thought. Yeah, I think you're headed in the right direction, but we're going to just fine-tune that a little bit here in a bit.
Answer prayer.
Okay, well, how would an angel answer prayer?
No, assist in an answer prayer providentially.
Okay.
Explain that, right?
Okay. Tossing it back to me. Let's flip it around a little bit. Sometimes if you struggle looking at it this way, if you turn the coin over, sometimes it gets a little easier. Let's look at it in reverse. Is Satan still active today? Are evil angels still active today? Well, everybody says, well, sure. How does Satan and his helpers, how do they work today?
Temptations.
All right, a good answer there. What else? Temptations. Can the devil work through people? How do we know that? Matthew 16, I will build my church. Jesus said, look, I've got to go and die. And Peter says, never will that happen. And what's Jesus say? Get behind me, Satan. Well, who were those words applied to? Peter. So, was the devil at work? Yes. How was he working on Jesus on the occasion of Matthew chapter 16? He was working through Peter, who was an apostle of Christ, someone who was close to the Lord. Now, if the devil was able to do that, not miraculously, but if the devil was able to use those circumstances involving Peter, the right conversation, the right people, the right time, would then it not also be possible for good angels to function in the same way? Yes. And along with people, you might have circumstances. Let's take a look at some passages here. These will head us in the direction that Bonnie was going. Let's take a look at, we'll look at these in reverse. 1 Thessalonians 2:18. After that, we'll go back and take a look at 2 Corinthians 12:7. Following that, we'll take a look at 1 Corinthians 7:5. Then we'll see what we've got over in the book of Mark, chapter 4, and verse 15. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 18. Who has it and wants to go? Steve.
Therefore, we wanted to come to you, even I, Paul, time and again, but Satan hindered us.
Okay. We don't know all the circumstances. Almost nothing is known about that, except Paul said, look, we wanted to make this trip, and the devil hindered us. Think about how many times in life where something has come up with us when it comes to travel. Somebody says, we had this plan, didn't work out. There was something that came up, maybe it was the weather, somebody got sick, Steve?
There was a note in my Bible about that passage. It says that hindered is a military term describing the breaking up of bridges and roads and making an invading army's progress as slow as possible.
Yeah.
So if we were coming to church and all of a sudden a bridge was out or a road was closed, mm-hmm. that hinders.
Yeah. There are some things that are major hindrances. You say, well, this came up, but we can work around it. We can still go. Or you may have so many hindrances that arise that you say, we can't go. It was just this and this and this and this. The devil can put up those obstacles. But as the devil can put up those obstacles, good angels would be doing the opposite. And what would that be? You're trying to put up obstacles and we're doing our task, our job to tear them down. The devil's trying to oppress. The good angels are saying, we want to bless. And we're going to talk about this, Lord willing, in a future class as far as this spiritual war that's taking place. But when you start looking at it from this perspective, just this one passage, it indicates to you that angels are interested in the bad angels in opposing you as a child of God, and the good angels are interested in helping you. Now, if you have both, what do you think that means for you as a Christian? Okay, I've kind of got two answers. Carol, I think I heard you first, then Kitty will go back to you.
Hopefully
you'll choose the right one. That's a good answer. Kitty?
You have to be aware.
You have to be aware of that. Anything else, though?
You have to be prepared.
Well, that's good, too.
There's a war going on inside you.
Yeah. But there's still one other critical component here.
We have the Holy Spirit.
I think you hit it. What'd you say?
Pray.
Pray. If you know that spiritual battle is out there and you've got both going on, don't you want to pray that the good ones are going to succeed and help you? Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 14. That gives you a new perspective and it should give you a new appreciation for prayer. All right, 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 7. Who's there and wants to go? 2 Corinthians 12, verse 7. Kathy. Okay, this again takes you back to the area of the devil and his helpers like to be obstructionists. They want to tear up, they want to interfere with, they want to mess things up. And there's a limit on how much they can do, and that also seems to be true for good angels. But in this spiritual tug of war, it's what can we throw at this guy? Good angels, on the other hand, we're going to try to undo that. And again, prayer, as we mentioned a few moments ago, is going to be really, really helpful in that struggle, asking God for maximum help and to push back the forces of evil. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 5. Let's take a look at that one too. Glenda, you have it?
No.
Oh, okay. Let's take it. Oh, well, we'll take your thought. Go ahead. Lois, do you want to get 1 Corinthians 7 and 5? Okay.
Who's all about Jesus. And
Yeah. Well, that's what we're talking about. The right things, the right places, the right times, the right circumstances. Satan tries to use those things. God and his forces are also availing themselves at those things as well. And the battle that's taking place is probably well beyond our comprehension, even if we could see it. But it really appears to be a fantastic struggle that's been going on for a long, long time. All right, Lois, 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 5.
Stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again, lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control.
Okay, Paul's talking about a husband and wife, the relationship that they have there as far as a sexual relationship, and he says Satan will use an opportunity in that department if he can. So again, you've got him and his forces using what he can, and God and his angels using what they can to counteract and offset that. Then we had one more chapter, Mark chapter 4 and verse 15. Somebody back there and want to take care of that one for us too. Mark chapter 4, verse 15. Kitty.
And these are they by the wayside, where the word is sown, but when they have heard,
they take what the word is sown in their heart. Okay. The devil, when the word of God is sown in a person's heart, how quickly does the devil want to show up? Immediately. And wants to snatch away the word. All right, if Satan and his helpers are interested in pulling that word and stopping the word, then you would think that good angels are interested in what? Seeing that that word stays, grows, and is able to go in a lot of different areas. So when you start thinking about the spiritual battle between good angels and bad angels, especially when it comes to God's people, it involves a lot of different areas. May involve evangelism. It may involve the struggle with temptation. It may involve faithfulness. What about getting somebody back? Can you imagine? Let's go back to Luke chapter 15 for just a second. Remember Jesus talked about the angels in heaven, how they rejoice more over the one that comes back than the 99 that never left? Maybe the rejoicing is not just based on the fact that one came back. The rejoicing may also be based on what? We won that battle. We had a part in bringing that person back. The devil and his forces were over there. Here we were over here. And as we look back at that war, that tug of war, we won the battle. Now, I'm sure that they were happy for the person, but also as you think about it from a human perspective, that they can share in the same kinds of emotions that we do, again, that has to be a wonderful, wonderful feeling. Thoughts that you have before we move down a little bit more? Carol? Well, if the word is as powerful as what the Bible describes and you start letting that sort of seep out rather than seep in, it's not going to go well. But you're correct. Anybody else? Glenda?
Children. About the children that, you know, rearing and, you know, as grandparents and parents growing up, to get them to read the word just a little bit, maybe a verse a day or something. But there's always something else that gets in the way that will continue to get in the way unless you're training them.
I'm going to take that and build on that in two different ways. Number one, do you think that the devil and his helpers are interested in trying to do some bad things among young people?
Yes.
For example, go into the schools and twist some things around, get God out? Sure. Well, once again, if they're interested in doing that, you would think that good angels would also be interested in that as well, because children are sinless. But the second point is maybe even bigger than that. Do you remember the point that we made last week about Hebrews chapter 12? How many angels are there? Lois read the passage. It was that word myriads. It's just innumerable, to use some other translations. All right, if all those things are taking place that we've talked about, the devil and his helpers are trying to stir up all kinds of bad stuff in just about every place that you can imagine. And God's angels throughout the world are also trying to work on behalf of the saved, Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 14, what do you need as far as people, numbers? It's not 5 or 10 or 1,000 or probably even 10,000. You know, you're dealing with maybe hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of creatures, because there's a lot going on in the world at any given time. And I think those two things go together very, very well, that you can begin to perhaps have a better appreciation for why there are so many, because there's so much work for them to do. Any other thoughts before we move down a little bit further? Tim, did you have...
Christians just have an enormous responsibility, not only to themselves, but to everybody they come in contact with. And, I mean, God could make us do whatever he wants us to. He can direct the angels to make us do whatever he wants us to do, and yet he's left all this decision-making on our own shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to our souls saving, it's all on us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's really important to come to church every opportunity that you have, because the devil never gives up, not for a minute.
No.
And if we don't come in here on Wednesday and Sunday nights and whenever we can to recharge ourselves, sort of, we're letting him have his way, and he's a lot more capable than we are. Without Christ,
Sure, there should be, as Carol mentioned earlier, some things that we are doing on our own on a regular basis, but also in a corporate congregational sense, and we need both to really stay strong. Very good. When we think about angels, this is something that we've not talked about yet as far as the work and the help that they give people. Remember, rich man, Lazarus, Luke chapter 16, doesn't give us so much information about how the rich man got into the Hadean realm, but we do know how Lazarus got there. An angel, or angels plural, took him. Angels, it's plural. Luke chapter 16 and verse 22. So they're also involved with that activity. One wonders, at least I wonder, how the unsaved get into the Hadean realm. When you look at the number of people who die each day, that's a bunch of folks. Now, how long does it take for the person who dies to go from where they have passed to the Hadean realm? It may be instantaneous. They may not, as far as time, if we can look at it in that way, need very much time. But they are involved in that activity as well, maybe for the unsaved. But then, this is moving forward a little bit in time, but in Matthew chapter 13, verses 47 through 50, and this is stated at least twice in this chapter, Jesus talks about angels at the end of time and says something very interesting about them. Starting with 13:47, again, the kingdom of heaven is likened unto a net that was cast into the sea, and gathered of every kind. Well, that's a reference to the saved and the unsaved. Which when it was filled, they drew up on the beach, and they sat down and gathered the good into vessels, but the bad they cast away. So shall it be in the end of the world. The angels, there they are again, shall come forth, and sever the wicked from among the righteous, and shall cast them into the furnace of fire. There shall be the weeping and the gnashing of teeth. Get the picture that's here. John chapter 5 says, when Jesus returns, how many are going to be raised from the dead? All people, anybody who's ever lived, the living will also be caught up in the air. How many people is that going to be? I don't know. Maybe several trillion? It's going to be a... we're back to the idea of bunches. And yet, as all the people are there, Matthew 13 says the angels are going to be separating the saved from the lost. That's an interesting picture to me. You could look at that in, I guess, a lot of different picture ways. You know, you're just going to take them over here and take them over here. Or does every angel get to collect some, like kids in Easter baskets? You know, everybody's kind of putting as many as they can in the basket. I have no idea how it's going to work. But Jesus says that angels are going to be sent forth, and they're going to be doing the separating and the collecting. And then the angels are going to cast the unsaved into hell. So if good angels are not taking the unrighteous and putting them into the punitive side of Hades now, certainly that's going to take place at the end of time when it comes to heaven and hell. Anything that you want to add or ask on that point? Okay, some other quick points here. When we think about angels, Stan alluded to this earlier, Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 1. Remember God, having of old times spoken unto the prophets by divers portions and in divers ways. God used a lot of different ways to communicate with people. Was one of those ways angelic communication? It was. And we've seen that with different people. And you have Paul saying in the book of Galatians, chapter 3 and verse 19, that angels had a part in delivering the Old Testament law. When you start thinking about the communication that angels had with people, you've got Mary in Luke chapter 1. You've got Joseph in Matthew chapter 2. You have the shepherds in a field. That's also in Luke chapter 2. You have angels communicating with people after the resurrection. That's in Matthew chapter 28. And then you've got them scattered throughout the Bible. You remember back there in Genesis chapter 19, Lot, people of Sodom, angels showed up. Genesis chapter 19, verses 1 through 2. They tried to get Lot and his family out, and the angel said that this place is going to be turned to ashes. That's what Peter tells us when he talks about that incident. And that was exactly right. And Daniel, Zechariah, we've talked about some passages from the book of Acts. All right, there's another thing that is said about angels. That's where I want to go, but we're a little short on time. So anything that you want to add or ask before we... Trace?
Well, from last week, we talked about how the angels felt, or how the devil felt.
We think.
Right. Well, you had written on the board, Isaiah 14, 12 through 15. We had this discussion at home. So. Anyway, in Isaiah 14, it's talking about Lucifer. So a lot of people think that's the devil, and when you first read it, if you take it, if you just read that, it does sound like it's a devil. But if you go back and read chapters 13 and 14 together, you realize that Lucifer is really like the king of Babylon, I believe.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah. Ezekiel 28, Isaiah chapter 14, Revelation chapter 12. Those are where people go to say this is how Satan fell. When you start looking at those chapters, that's not really what the writers were talking about. The best that you could do would be to say that, well, that is kind of secondary to Satan, maybe, but it's definitely not definitive. So that's why I use 1 Timothy chapter 5 about verse 8, where Paul talks about, and 1 Timothy chapter 3, that elders not fall into the sin, the reproach of the devil. It seems like pride was involved with the devil's fall. Jude talks about the fact that angels didn't want to keep their place, but there's not a lot of specific information. So going back to those Old Testament texts, and Revelation 12 definitely doesn't teach about the fall of Satan, neither does the information in Luke chapter 10. But people sometimes use that material in an incorrect way.